The teachers in Arizona are mad as hell, and the teachers in Milwaukee are being told to go to hell by a school board member. What the hell is going on? Let's bust some pencils.
This is Busted Pencils Radio, fully leaded education talk with Dr. Tim Slecker. Here's what's trending in education news.
From the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, 7 hours and one go to hell. Tempers flare at MPS meeting about $38.7 million budget hole. A seven-hour Milwaukee Public School Board meeting erupted into a shouting match after a teachers' union official accused a school board member of pitting teachers and families against each other, and he responded by telling her to go to hell.
Well, there you have it. And that ended that meeting.
And on to the next agenda item.
Okay. Up next, item number three.
Okay. Let's talk about school lunch next.
Okay, now, who's going to go to heaven? this is tough. We're seeing this a lot in cities where these budget deficits for schools are massive, mm-hmm. right? And, you know, here, though, in Milwaukee, we have a person, Amy Mazelko, who's in here, who challenges this board member. And for the context behind this is to understand is that they were talking about staff raises. And when we talk about staff, we're talking about everybody from the school lunch lady to the maintenance to the paraprofessionals. And then the choice then was either they get a raise or you parents get buses, but somebody has to give. And Amy was like, hold on, you're pitting people against each other, and that's not the way to solve this problem, to which Mr. Bonds said, go to hell. And maybe while you're at it, try bringing up your test scores.
That shocked me. I watched this video, and, you know, for him to just erupt, you know, you see people, and they, go to hell, and it was done. But then all of a sudden, he just kind of stood up. He's like, well, if you got your test scores up, or else y'all can be out of here.
Let me throw one more thing at
right.
you, too.
Bomb. Just, see ya.
You know, it's all about test scores. It's, you know, these relationships are tough. They're hard. They're the negotiations. I think what this is, though, is this is a micro kind of lens into the bigger picture that's happening across America, where this idea of teachers and parents and staff, the entire school, kind of the community of school, let's call it that way, have come together and said, you're not splitting us apart like has happened in the past.
We're working together.
We're going to work together. And that's driving this board crazy. That's driving people crazy in Arizona. That's driving people. In fact, we'll talk about that. But Amy, this is what's really cool about this. Amy is going to be on the show later. And we're going to talk directly about this. And I want to see, you know, maybe did she throw back a little punchline or not? Because that's the part that's missing. But when we later in the show, though, we'll talk directly to the recipient of Go to Hell, Amy Mazelko.
From the Chicago Sun-Times, Illinois plan replace armed school officers with therapists. Some Illinois lawmakers want to give extra money to schools that replaced armed security officers with unarmed social workers and behavior therapists, an approach to safety that's far different than a national push to add police or armed teachers following a mass shooting at a Florida high school.
So no more officers, or actually it's if you
reduce the number
of officers, we're going to give you money so that you can hire social workers and behavior therapists.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to do this hopefully because I would hope there's some kind of research base that would say this is a good thing to do.
Right.
As opposed to this is the soft, cushy, mushy thing to do because that's what everybody wants. Right?
Right.
Because armed guards scare us.
Right. They're scary.
We don't like seeing them, and we want to see nice, fluffy, cushy therapists mm-hmm. instead. Yeah, you know, but let's talk about, you know, again, context matters, reality matters, the place of where this is happening. There is absolutely a connection to armed police officers in schools in low socioeconomic areas that then contribute to an overall kind of juvenile rate that then perpetuates itself into what people say the school to prison pipeline.
Mm-hmm.
And so would it be better to have a therapist there and not arrest kids but help kids deal with their problems before you arrest them.
Well, but then does it become a class for these kids that, okay, we're going to take out some of the armed guards and we're going to add therapists. And are these therapists going to twiddle their thumbs in their office because no one's going to come see them? Is it a stigma for these kids to go talk to a therapist? Well, it's scary to talk to an armed guard. It can be, unless you know them.
Well, and in fact, that would be one of the issues where I'd say I'm very doubtful that any kid with a traumatic experience in their mind is going to go up to an armed guard and ask for help.
But how many of those kids
Okay, so you bring up the other point. How many are going to go down in the hall and see the therapist because
right.
they're looking over the shoulder going, I wonder which friend sees me going to see the therapist.
Yeah.
Now they're going to call me crazy. I know. So we've got a culture.
You're a narc
there.
Or you're crazy. Right. Either one.
So addressing the culture of school violence, I think, is what we really need to see here. Mm-hmm. And this might be one of those, okay, why are we pitting the possibility of two situations in which we might be able to help? In the other words, you know, is it full elimination of guards? You know, when we were talking earlier, you were saying, how about security guards?
Right.
You know?
If you have somebody that's not as armed and not as scary and doesn't look like so much of an officer
right,
of the
Paul,
law.
Paul Blart,
Paul
mall
Blart,
cop.
Put the mall cop in there.
Put him in there.
That's happy and checking in with the kids and making sure everything's good. And you got a problem? Maybe they can say, hey, why don't you go talk to someone instead of the
We're going to have then therapist-trained mall cops.
Sure.
Mall cops.
Hey.
Small
cops.
But, it's one of those, you sit there and go, okay, are we going to lose something? Are we going to gain something by doing an either-or approach? And I think sometimes that's the issue, is that we always present either-ors.
Why can't it be a mix? A new AP poll from the New York Times. Amid strikes, Americans back teacher raises. Americans overwhelmingly believe teachers don't make enough money, and half say they'd support paying higher taxes to give educators a raise.
What?
Is this really a headline?
Well, I think the last sentence, when you said that, people are willing to pay more taxes for teacher raises, that's a massive shift in the American conscience.
Yes, it is.
That idea. And so when you look at West Virginia, when you look at Kentucky, when you look at Oklahoma, when you're looking at Arizona now, and you're saying these teachers are going out on strike, even though the governor of Arizona last week decided that when teachers strike, child molestation and poisoning occurs.
They're all in trouble.
They're all
in trouble. Of them.
But this poll shows that, hey, and it looks across Democrats, Independents, and Republicans, and all three groups, a majority of all three groups, support giving teachers a higher salary at the cost of, which would be out of their own pocket, taxes.
Yep.
Right? And people are like, I can't believe that's ever happening. I think it's an interesting question to say, how did we get to the point where people are now saying, wait, please pay my teachers more. I'll even give you more tax money. What's happened? Has it gotten that bad that parents are starting to see the effects? And I will say this, anybody who's been watching this, we've got 25 years of defunding public schools, whether it's classroom supplies, whether it's teacher salaries, whether it's benefits. Are we now looking at 20 years and saying, holy crap, my son's teacher works at night, and the book that my son brings home for American history is 25 years old and pages are falling out.
Right.
Something's gone wrong.
Well, and I think a lot of it, too, it's all of a sudden it's become right in their face.
Yeah.
The teachers are getting louder about what's going wrong. The kids, their books are crappy when right. they come home. And it's interesting, too, that finally people are seeing that it's not, they're not blaming the local governments. They're not blaming the teachers solely. They're not blaming everybody solely. It's everybody's fault.
Yeah.
Do something. Fix it.
Fix this mess. Fix this mess and stop trying to educate the population of America, because understand that we're talking about public schools, which educate well over 89% of the entire population. You can't do that on the cheap.
No.
Okay?
You can't.
So stop it and let's do this right, because my kid, and I'm a Republican, and your kid, and you're a Democrat, go to the same school and need awesome teachers. Let's pay them.
Time for Tim to rant. This is Someone Has to Say It.
Teacher shortage, my arse. There is no teacher shortage. I now have the proof. A school in Wisconsin recently closed due to enrollment issues. Over 20 teachers were laid off, furloughed, fired, whatever. Some of those now jobless teachers are looking for jobs. They can't find any. What? Huh? How is that possible when you have a struggle and a shortage for teachers? Because the real problem is that these newly available teachers are fully licensed and come with years of experience, and some have advanced degrees. They're the best of the best. However, the best of the best aren't being hired. Why? Isn't there a shortage? Exactly. How can we have a real shortage of teachers when they're willing to relocate and go for a job anywhere else? But here's the reality summed up in a quote from one of these furloughed teachers. Quote, I've got 16 years experience. I'm 53 and a half. I've got a master's degree. Nobody's going to hire me. And that's the real problem. We have a shortage of schools with the resources needed to hire experienced and competent teachers. We literally can't afford to pay real teachers. And that, my friends, is why we have a teacher shortage. We have a shortage of people unwilling to work for crap pay. Solution? Create a state fund to relocate experienced teachers. Nah, let's create pipelines of alternative certified teachers that will work on the cheap. That will work on the cheap. Sad, 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 but true. She's a teacher in Prescott Valley, Arizona, where she has spent the last 9 years in 7th through 12th grade classrooms all over the town. She's taught in charter schools, traditional schools, alternative venues, and public schools. Last April, she was given County Teacher of the Year in Arizona. Welcome to Busted Pencils, Jessica Marks. Teacher of the Year? I don't think we've ever spoken to a Teacher of the Year on Busted Pencils. You're the first celebrity that we have.
Oh, thank you. I don't have a crown or a sash or anything, but I appreciate that.
Well, actually, so just the listener can go out there and check out the Busted Pencils website, bustedpencils.com, and actually see Jessica's new guest post that is up, fired from Kippen, Texas, to Teacher of the Year in Arizona. And this is what really makes your story unique, is that actually you're a fired teacher who then became Teacher of the Year. And make sure you go to bustedpencils.com, check out Fired from Kippen, Texas to Teacher of the Year in Arizona by Jessica Marks. The whole story's out there, but we're going to talk about that today. Jessica,
yes.
You taught in a KIPP school first. So anybody who, just in case, knowledge is power. This is a no excuses type of school. And what happened?
Well, that was the worst experience of my whole life. I was chosen out of like 1,300 candidates, and I felt so honored. I had this like activist mindset that I was going to change the world. And when I got there, they really didn't want a teacher. They wanted like a disciplinarian, somebody who was going to make these kids be obedient. And I just wasn't a very good fit. And I tried really hard. I tried to, you know, keep some sense of myself as a nurturing, kind woman, and it just went terribly wrong. And I was working like 20-hour days, and they at some point decided that they had lost confidence in me for the kids to be able to pass state testing at the end of the year, which I did not. I was not losing confidence. I knew that they could do it, and but they fired me, and they fired me in the most humiliating way possible.
But before you get fired, wait, you were chosen out of 1,300 applicants.
Right, and I had a two-day interview when I was there. It was intense.
Two-day interview, you're working at Knowledge is Power, KIPP Schools, mm-hmm. And I mean, what's the atmosphere? Because I think that's the other thing. When you were chosen, you go in there with this, you said, activist mindset. You're going to change the world. And it sounds like your world got changed.
Oh, it was horrible. I really thought that in my head that, you know, these kids needed a strong teacher who loved learning and really believed in them. I came with like this altruistic heart that my energy would help them succeed. And when I got there, you know, and the whole interview process, it was about, like, look around, look at how open our campus is, so beautiful, and we're doing amazing things. And they had a little garden that they used for the school lunches. Like, we support kids in every aspect. And I bought into it. And then when I got there and I was really in it, it was really about, can the kids answer one more multiple choice question correctly than they could at the beginning of the class by the time you were done with your lesson? So
that's the measure of success, one more correct answer.
Correct. Okay. And then they do these interim assessments. We call them IAs. And we spend a whole day going over the data, which teachers are doing a good job, which ones aren't. You know, you're put under a microscope, and it's broadcast for everyone to see. It was really intense, and the hours were really long. The kids they did not want to be there. The kids called it kids in prison program. You know, we didn't let them talk at all. They had to be silent during the class. They had to be silent when they walked to the next class. We didn't give them any recess. When they ate lunch, they could talk to their neighbor only. It was a really difficult position for the kids to be in and for me. When I had been interviewing, I thought, oh, look at these amazing, well-behaved kids that love learning. And then when you're in it, you realize, oh, they're just beating us all down.
So that's the end. Walk you into this classroom, wonderful kids sitting there all paying attention. It looks great. I can't wait. Jessica, you're sitting there going, I can't wait to get this job. And the reality is though, this is a fully staged, controlled, behavioristic setting. Is that overstating it?
Well, I mean, I just think that that's what they want, is obedience. You know, sit here, work really hard, and don't talk. That we're not here for any socialization. So it was false. It gave you this impression they were motivated, like you said, but it did seem staged. I mean, it was totally staged. They just are expected to be obedient. And there's really, you know, they really want kids to be silent and be workhorses.
So how do you go from one out of 1,300 to getting this job to... how do they determine that you're not up to standards? Your kids weren't on the IAs, the interim assessments. Were they not getting enough answers correct? Go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. I was actually doing really well. My kids were outperforming the other KIPP middle school. I was doing very well. But we have these one-on-one meetings where the assistant principal comes in and you have this agenda every week, very intense, and you have to admit how many kids are special ed students that are failing, English language learners that are failing, and then why are you failing them? You know, what are you doing that is making this not successful? And there's one part of the IA was like, you know, what are your goals personally and professionally this week? And I remember that I admitted I was really struggling these long days and all of that. I'd really like to see a therapist, and I'd really like to start taking more frequent showers, because you have no time for anything else except for this KIPP lifestyle. And that's when they said, when they decided to look more intensely in my classroom. They started pointing video cameras and then would come in and critique me on my clothing, the handwriting that I wrote on the board. My objective wasn't student friendly. They were just very nitpicky about all sorts of student behaviors. And then all of a sudden I had been performing very well, and then they gave me a rubric like in November, and they said that I had like 7 criteria, and they said this is what a good teacher would look like. And then on a scale of 1 to 4, you know, it averaged out that I was a 1.5. And they said that I had 19 days to turn myself into a 3.
Oh, so, okay, so there's an evaluation rubric that was actually for you, not for the students. And you're out of a 4-point scale, you were given a 1.5 after intense video surveillance. You know, The part where you said, I just wanted to take a shower and have some sense of, you know, but they're critiquing your clothing. I've not yet, in being a professor of teacher education and now a dean of education, I've not once seen a rubric that we took into consideration clothing style. We appreciate that you dress in some kind of moderate thing, but I've not yet seen teacher excellence rated on wardrobe. Maybe if there's a wardrobe malfunction, that could be a problem. But so
it was under professionalism, Tim.
Okay.
They marked it in there, and then we would converse. But the criterion didn't say, like, a one, you dress like a slob. A four, you are a princess, and you come to school beautifully in a ball gown. It was just, they just marked random things, mostly on the one side, and then they just explain to me verbally why they gave me that score.
Did you say, look, if I wasn't teaching 20 hours a day, I would actually go get a ball gown and get a shower and come in and look like a princess, damn it.
I agree. You know, you're not sleeping when you do this. I mean, I would get to work at 4 o'clock. I would wake up around 4 o'clock in the morning, and I would go right to work. You know, I would come home at 9 p.m. and continue the rest of my day. Like I would be frantically grading in all of this. I found success if I was able to go to bed by midnight, but that was rare. Mm-hmm. You know, midnight, bedtime, 4 o'clock in the morning, waking up, this is not a sustainable lifestyle. And I think, like, teaching requires so much more than just passing out, you know, multiple choice tests and grading them. It requires, like, compassion and kindness and, you know, empathy and leadership. And I just was completely worn out, and they took it as my personal flaw. Like, I was not a strong leader. And
sounds like you didn't have enough grit.
I didn't have enough grit. And I have excuses. No excuses.
Okay, so you get fired, and the part two, though, is you end up in Arizona teaching, and as we introduced you, you're Teacher of the Year. I'm surprised you even went and got another teaching job.
You know, me too, Tim, actually. I think that it was one of those pivotal moments. I really considered giving up teaching altogether. I wanted to work at Home Depot, I thought. I'd be so great at, like, watering plants.
I was going to say, are you going to be the person out there watering the flowers?
Yeah. Okay. And I could be real smiley and friendly to everyone.
In Arizona, as opposed to Madison, Wisconsin, you could water the flowers in Home Depot year-round.
I could. It would have been a magical job. But Home Depot didn't hire me. Oh. And I think that was really lucky. My friends had said, once you apply at this middle school over here, they'll hire anyone. And
that feels nice. Hey, they'll hire anyone.
Yeah, and then they did. They hired me.
Okay.
So I remember in the interview, I'd had a reputation before I went to Texas as being a very popular teacher. I'd won some teacher awards out here before I left, and that's why I thought it would be a good KIPP teacher, was because I'd been successful. But I came back all broken and worn out and sad. I didn't know that I could teach again. But this school, they remembered my reputation, and I think that I had the job the second I applied. And I cried in the interview. It was not my best show, but they hired me.
Okay. Well, they hired you, and so what happens when you get hired? It sounds like things work out.
It did. I was really honest with the boss. I said, you know, I was upfront about being fired, and I said, you know, you won't have to fire me. If I'm not doing a good job for these students, I'll just quit, and you can get anyone else to take my spot. And she was like, we're lucky. This is Texas's big loss, you know, our tremendous gain. And they just treated me like I had value, and they spent a lot of time building me up. I got, like, notes on my desk, and, you know, my kids, I gave them every bit of everything I had. I was, for them, the person that I wish I had in my life at that moment. You know, I was encouraging, and I believed in them, and I gave them all my attention, and I was so kind and encouraging. And the kids really blossomed under my leadership. Our schools in Arizona don't have anything. These kids don't have anything. Sometimes they go home and they don't have electricity. That's what gets me when they say, we want technology in our classrooms and more computers and stuff. I'm like, what's going to happen when they go home and they can't plug it in? Like, they can't do the work. So I try to get them to talk to each other and talk to me, and I was very successful. The first year they gave me, you know, kind of the kids that were naughty and they weren't really trying very hard, and we had great success. Our test scores were going up, and not that that's the only measure of success, but parents were happy. And then the next year, the staff who had kids at the middle school wanted their kids in my classroom. And then the principal was like, well, let's give you the honor kids, too, because those are our most high-maintenance mommies. and then we were incredible. We had these Socratic seminars, and we related our books to the world, and, you know, the kids were amazing. And then I was really flourishing. And then that's when I was nominated for Teacher of the Year.
And you got the Teacher of the Year, and so here we are, though, and this is where we kind of come to a new situation because, again, I would refer people to BustedPencils.com to the guest blog post that you put in there because you have to write a speech and give a speech about being Teacher of the Year, but you're having a little bit of a difficulty because of, and we've seen this, you know, whether it's in West Virginia, whether it's in Oklahoma, and now we see it's in Arizona, the Sea of Red marching in Phoenix. The teaching profession and the things that you're dealing with in your classroom are kind of creating a conflict about, so what should I talk about as Teacher of the Year?
It is creating a conflict because I felt like after Kip discarded me that I was lucky to get any teaching job at all. And I kept my mouth shut about what a bad job I had done for Kip and because I felt responsible for my own failures. And then when I came to Arizona and I was having success, I was just so grateful to have any little pittance of, you know, success at all. And now it's been a few years, and I'm starting to become very angry that my students deserve far better. And I imagine that that's that sea of red that you saw at the Capitol and across the country. People are, you know, supporting teachers who are walking out of their classrooms because these classrooms are a disgrace. I sent you some pictures about my desks are broken. My textbooks are actually the same textbooks that I used when I was in high school, and I'm 40 years old. You know, my dictionary, the class set of dictionaries that I have, are just ripped up and, you know, no covers on them. It's just, it's a disgrace.
So, you sent me these pictures?
Yes, I will.
Okay, so one of the things I wanted, just so the listeners will know, these pictures will be up on the Busted Pencils Facebook page so people can take a look at the resources that Jessica has to use, and remember, this is a Teacher of the Year, and these are the resources she'll use. So go to Facebook, Busted Pencils, check out those pictures. But go ahead, Jess. I mean, so what else is happening, you know?
I went to the secretary. I was doing this lesson that I found. I was inspired by something I found on some teacher website where the kids would respond with Post-its. So I went to the office, and I said, you know, I need some Post-its. And she hands me one little pack. And I was like, no, I need 220 Post-its today. And she was like, no, like horrified. And I looked at her and I was, okay, I guess I'm going to Walmart then. I didn't know that we couldn't get supplies. And I'm shocked. Like every bit of pencils and Post-its and anything that we use in the classroom, I have provided. And I've been so angry lately with our governor, you know, talking about raising salaries but not funding my classroom, that I have stopped bringing in supplies to my classroom. And the kids are like, you don't have any more tape. And you don't, Miss Marks, like, where's my, don't you have a pencil for me? And I'm like, no, I want you to see what the state is funding you. I am not subsidizing your education anymore, and I'm sorry. I want you to see this for yourself. And I feel like the kids aren't happy. Not all the parents are happy, you know, but I really want them to know, like, I have provided every bit of your education. I have scraped together our lessons with nothing but, like, little bits of pencils and scraps of paper. I have been funded nothing, and I'm ready to be very angry I'm not grateful for this classroom anymore. I feel so lucky. I love teaching. It saved me. You know, after KIPP and all of that, I really did believe that, you know, being a good teacher was my purpose in this world. And students respond. I've taught more than 1,900 kids in the span of my educational career, and they are grateful. I see them at the grocery store, and they have babies, and they're like, Miss Marks, I want you to see my baby. And I feel like I have been a productive, valuable part of this community. And that's why it hurts me so much that I walk out, because I want the governor and the legislature to see, you know, I love these kids, and this is my sacrifice. I'm going to walk away from them until you treat them the way they deserve. And
that's a tricky political, you know, act the teachers are doing there. It seems like it's working. And in fact, you know, maybe we shouldn't call it a trick, because it's not. You're actually, though, but the idea of saying, like, I'm not going to use my own, you know, paycheck, which my paycheck is a real problem to begin with anyway, but I'm not going to use my own paycheck to provide supplies for a public school that constitutionally we say, any state constitution would say that it's the state's job to provide for the education, a public education. Making that, you know, kind of statement and forcefulness, that's what we're seeing across Arizona right now in the walkout, in fact, is that it's not about the raise as much as it's about the conditions of the classroom.
Right. That's exactly right. I personally, like, this is what the job pays, and I understand that. I got a second job working at a golf course because I want to continue teaching these kids. What I'm not willing to continue to have is students that come in and have nothing. And I think that this is turning into kind of, that's one thing KIPP did well. They bought us everything we needed. They were so heavily funded. And, you know, they gave all the teachers computers and cell phones and all of this. And, you know, my teacher friends are having their cell phone service cut off because they can't afford it anymore. And that's dangerous. But they're in their classrooms, and they're working with what they've got, and they're trying their best. And it's just, I just don't think that our job is hard enough. We have kids that are really suffering. We have, you know, learning disabilities. We teach all kids. And then we are not given anything to help them with. And that's disgraceful. The state should be ashamed.
Well, you know what, though, Jessica? I mean, you might have been fired from KIPP, and you are the Teacher of the Year in Arizona. And, in fact, I think this advocacy that you are now embarking on, and all of the teachers in Arizona actually are starting to show that all of you teachers out there are in some way a form of Teacher of the Year. But please go to BustedPencils.com, check out Jessica's guest post. And Jessica, I have a feeling that you probably need to put on your red T-shirt and get busy today, because most of the Arizona teachers are out there walking the picket and making a showing. So something coming up for you?
Oh, yes. I've invested in some more red. We're out there every single day. This is going to be a long fight, Tim.
Well, Jessica, what we say here is thank you for busting pencils.
Thank you very much.
From Milwaukee Teachers Education Association, teaching all children.
She is on the executive board, and she is the current vice president of the Milwaukee Teachers Education Association. Welcome to Busted Pencils, Amy Mazelko. Amy, hello.
Hey, thanks a lot for having me, Tim.
Before you start yelling at me, I want to let you know, go to hell.
Yeah, I've heard that a few times over the past week.
You seem to elicit that response. The school board director, Michael Bonds, the other night, actually in front of people, YouTubing, you name it, decided to tell you to go to hell. What in the world could you have said to that poor man?
Director Bonds's comportment at the school board has been eroding over the past several months. He threw out my friend and union secretary, Ingrid Henry, a couple months ago. He's thrown out some other folks giving testimony last month. And then last week, he made a motion to pay for some student transportation, which we as a union are very much in support of. But he suggested that the student busing transportation be paid for that that money be taken out of the pay set aside for cost of living raises for educators in the district. And family after family walked up to the microphone and, you know, expressed their desire to maintain busing, but then also went on to say, hey, we love the educators in our district and in our schools, and we need you to take care of them. You know, we're not looking for one or the other. We want both. So when I went up to testify, I just was very clear in my message that educators and families and MPS are on the same side. We are not pit against one another, and there will be no one, let alone an elected official on our school board, that will be allowed to suggest that we be pit against one another. So I just called that out, and I asked him to stop engaging in that.
Your exact quote, according to the Journal Sentinel, was, hey, no one in this room will be pit against each other here. And, you know, so it's not an issue of transportation or greedy staff raises, you pick. It's like we're all in this together, and that's where you get the response. It comes pretty much immediately after that, right?
Yes. He actually started talking over me during my testimony. And he started talking over me twice. And then he told me to go to hell. I couldn't believe that he had said that in front of the families and students and educators sitting in the auditorium. And so I asked him, I said, I should go to hell? Because I really couldn't believe what I had just heard. And he doubled down and he said yes. And then he stood up and started waving his hand and saying that there were other people in the audience as well that could go to hell, that they were to blame for some of our students' standardized test scores that he values and thinks are important.
Yeah, I wanted you to get to that because, of course, he had to follow up with, you know, and while you're at it, get those test scores up, because if you're going to complain about money, I need to see some kind of test score growth, as if those two things were connected. But I love the hands are up in the air, walking out, go to hell and get your test scores up, you lazy teachers.
It's not the first time that he has made statements like that about educators at a public school board meeting, but to do that on a night when that auditorium was full of families, you know, our students were dragged through the mud with that statement and its comportment beneath the expectations of that elected office. We should be students' champions all the time.
It really galvanized you guys because, I mean, just was it yesterday, the day before, that you had a massive march in support of teachers and students together advocating for, actually, let's not, quote, cut this budget, but let's do what's right for kids and teachers.
You know, I value all of the MPS families that I've met since I began teaching in 1992 at Lee Elementary School. You know, I always say that I went to UW-Whitewater to earn my degree and certification to teach, but it was really the students and families at Lee Elementary School that taught me how to be a good teacher. The families and parents that I have met in the past 8 days following that school board meeting, it's been amazing. I know far more families than I did a week ago, and they joined us in force yesterday, 1,000 strong, to simply say that we're one Milwaukee Public Schools family, and education workers and families, MPS families and students are on the same side, and we want something better for public schools, and we're not going to back off until we get it.
Somebody, of course, is going to say, but Amy, the budget only allows for so much, and there have to be reasonable cuts that you're willing to take, or else we're not going to be able to do that. But I also then dug a little bit deeper and found out, however, some of the things that this budget gives out are some pretty hefty raises to certain people and pays for some things that might, quote, not be needed.
Yeah, the $38 million shortfall sits inside of the context of a billion-dollar budget. And so there are absolutely places in a billion-dollar budget that can be looked at for adjustments that don't further compromise and punish students and educators in classrooms. And, you know, I've watched this current administration, which is an outgoing administration, argue for millions of dollars, $5 million last year for Chromebooks. $1 million last year for student uniforms. Those student uniforms are sitting in thrift stores across the city. I've watched this administration and school board sign off on all kinds of consultants that fly in to our school district And none of those consultants seem to change what's happening for our students. So there are millions of dollars in our contracts line. There is an extremely bloated central office hierarchy. It's this phrase this year just keeps coming up. Why does my boss have a boss who has a boss who has a boss?
Well, that's leadership because, you know, we've got to keep people in hierarchy. Think about that, though, what you just said. So all of those leaders then have then decided to spend. So let's put a leader with a leader with a leader whose boss is somebody's boss who's somebody's boss. And together they decided, hey, you know what? We're not smart enough between the eight of us. Let's pay $1 million for a consultant to tell us how to raise our test scores, of which we couldn't do because the consultant didn't. This is kind of folly stuff.
It's maddening. Greg Thornton, when he came here in 2010, introduced this bloated multiple-tier administrative system. It was continued on and bolstered by the current outgoing superintendent. But what people came out for last night is that they want resources that actually touch children on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. So $1 million for school uniforms, $5 million for Chromebooks. That could have been 60 reading specialists in our elementary schools working every single day with first, second, and third graders who are struggling to learn how to read. So educators know, believe me, how to get the biggest bang for buck to make sure that, students are learning. But we've been in a moment since Act 10 where, as you know, public school educators haven't really been listened to. We've been maligned and we've been scapegoated and we've been blamed. And, you know, what happened last night on the picket line with 3,000 people is, I have to say, it was the most hopeful I've been since Act 10. It was a joyful, beautiful feeling of resolve and hope and unity with people last night. I really do believe that these people, the MPS family, is going to insist on a budget in the short term in this district that doesn't hurt students and educators and is going to be committed long term to making our state proud again, to making our state one that is committed and fervently racing to fund our public schools because our kids depend on them.
Amy Mazzocco, Vice President, Milwaukee Teachers Education Association. I'm not going to tell you where to go. I am going to tell you, thanks for busting pencils.
Thank you, Tim.
Let's stick with our teachers from around the nation standing up and walking out. They're doing it in Colorado as well. Denver teacher Haley Braden takes on that famous question, what are the schools our children deserve?
Well, it's interesting you should ask because some of the founding members of our caucus were responsible for a whole campaign last spring, about a year ago, where in Denver we held several community meetings at different schools to ask parents, students, teachers, other community members what they believed their schools should be providing for their kids. And so parents, community members, teachers all came together to come up with these lists and discuss what are our schools doing well, what do we need to improve for the future. And what it came down to is schools should be not only places where children learn reading, writing, and math, but also community centers where the whole community feels like they have a stake in the school, whether they have kids in the school or not. So they're really beacons for the community and places where people come together to learn from each other, not just places where we give kids tests and homework.
Time now for our salute to historian and activist Howard Zinn. This is your moment of Zinn.
The power of a bold idea uttered publicly in defense of defiant opinion cannot be easily measured.
My thanks to the incredibly dedicated and brave teachers Amy Mazzocco, Jessica Marks, and Haley Braden for joining us today. I'm Dr. Tim Slecker. Thank you. I'm an activist now. Everything you said, I'm looking for a candidate at the state level, representative even, to say, why is it so hard for politicians to say what you just said, which was, we should do what's best for kids, those who among us have the means to do, we should do that for all kids. And actually, that's John Dewey made that quote a long time ago. And I'm paraphrasing it, you know, what the best, the well.